Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, Illinois-based gun manufacturer We1 Tactical, for their outrageous marketing of an assault weapon designed specifically for minors. The death stick in question is called a JR-15 and looks like an AR-15, but 20% smaller and lighter for easy use by children. The gun debuted at the Las Vegas Shotgun Show last month as a training weapon for children to be more easily indoctrinated into the cult of guns plaguing America right now. In addition to being child-sized, the weapon of war comes stamped with the image of a skull and crossbones holding a pacifier in its mouth. Do you not see the atrocity? All praise to California Governor Gavin Newsom for bringing awareness of the evil of this company and its product, and for helping us all be appropriately outraged at any gun that makes children like playing with it. Now, defenders will claim that this is only a single-shot weapon, it only holds one bullet, in a much lighter and less dangerous .22 caliber than the AR-15, but we know how much symbols matter, and the sheer brazenness of a company specifically making a gun for use by children is utterly indefensible. Advocates say this killing machine is a safe way to introduce children to the proper use of guns, but of course we know there's no such thing as a proper use of guns or a safe way to introduce children to them. And no weapon of war should ever be made appealing to children in any way whatsoever. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Florida Senator Rick Scott, who recently released his audaciously labeled 11-point plan to rescue America. Although there are many elements of this plan that are offensive, and perhaps the senator would earn our condemnation many times over if we actually read the entire document, one point in particular stands out as flagrantly wicked. Tucked away deep in Section 5 on fixing the economy is the following statement, and I quote, "All Americans should pay some income tax to have skin in the game, even if a small amount. Currently, over half of Americans pay no income tax," end quote. In other words, Rick Scott's great plan to save the American economy is to tax the poor. How dare he assert that every citizen should have to contribute to the governance of the country? How dare he imply that any person capable of earning an income is also capable of contributing to the greater good? And how dare he wage such a direct assault on the core unifying concept of our strategic plan for amassing political power, tax the rich and pay the poor to vote for us to continue taxing the rich? Look, we all know that a key part of our message is to remind poor people that they need us for everything as a result of them feeling powerless all the time. If they were to pay taxes and start believing that they had a stake in government policy, can you imagine the chaos that might ensue? I shudder to consider it. No. It is very important to keep separating our society into those who pay for things on the one hand and those who keep voting to take from those who pay for things on the other hand. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, a hearty round of praise to the publishers of the student newspaper at Justice Page Middle School in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The February 15th edition of the Rhino Report had a thoughtfully crafted and poignantly timed set of instructions for the student body entitled Protest Tips and Etiquette, which were intended to assist the students in expressing their fury at the killing of Amir Locke by the Minneapolis police. Among the pieces of Alinsky-esque wisdom were the following, and I quote, 1. When it comes to Black Lives Matter protests, if you're not black, remember that you're there to show your support and amplify black voices. Especially if you're white, if they're offering the megaphone for anyone to speak, it's not for you. You are here to listen and to show support. See, right from the start, an excellent reminder that white people are to see and not be heard. 2. You're free to document things with your phone, but please don't post anything with people's faces or identifying information in them, especially if someone is doing art and graffiti. This is such an important reminder that student protesters should never interfere with the artistic defacing of property for justice. 3. Wear nondescript clothing. Even if you aren't breaking the law, law enforcement may still try to come after you. In these situations, it's better to be paranoid than careless. So true. To protest the police, you must blend in and melt away, because the most important part of standing up for what you believe is making sure that no one has any idea who you are. Now, the newspaper also has useful safety tips, such as the importance of wearing long sleeves, a mask, and glasses to protect yourselves against, quote, COVID-19 and tear gas. This is good, but I was disappointed there were no guidelines for the safe use by middle schoolers of Molotov cocktails, given how prevalent they are at mostly nonviolent protests everywhere. But just think, can you imagine how much higher SAT and ACT scores would be across our great nation if only young potential agitators everywhere received important instructional materials like these? Well done, Justice Page Middle School. Thank you for making the minds of our precious 12-year-olds conform. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Wish I could see.
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.